Welcome to a new episode of the Computomics podcast. Our guest today is Kai Voss-Fels, the professor of plant breeding at Geisenheim University in Germany. Kai, thank you for coming to the podcast.
Yeah. Hey, Anna, how's it going? Yeah, thanks very much for inviting me.
Our pleasure. And Kai, I've already warned you, we like to start with an icebreaker. And given your research focus on grapevine breeding, I couldn't help but wonder, which is your favorite wine and why?
Oh, well, that's a good one, because there's lots of interesting wines. But I would probably say Riesling, really. I mean, I know it's not a very... It might not sound very exciting for a German to say Riesling is my favorite variety, but I guess I prefer Riesling over other varieties. Yes,
I don't drink as much wine anymore, but I do like Riesling as well. But yeah, that kind of leads us, or it started off in your area of research. Can you maybe tell our audience what is it that you and your team at Geisenheim University focus on with your research?
Yeah, sure. So we run a relatively large department here. We're about 40 people at the moment, consisting of researchers, engineers, lots of technicians, because the work we do involves lots of technical support. And our main focus is grapevine and genetic improvement of grapevine. But we've now launched a new department in which we want to extend our focus from grapevine into like other species as well. Definitely with a focus on already cultural species like apple and vegetable crops. But yes, grapevine is our biggest crop. So we have about 11 hectares of experimental vineyards. So we're surrounded by grapevine. It's actually quite nice. If you like, you know, wine and grapevine, it's a nice place. And we basically tackle, I'd say, almost any question with relevance to grapevine improvement. And I guess we'll talk a bit more about that, but you know, there's lots of interesting challenges with regards to improving grapevine as a crop, and we try to sort of tackle like a range of these challenges at once. Yeah,
I mean that almost begs the follow up. Yeah. What do you consider maybe some of the most important questions when it comes to grapevine improvement?
Well, the key features about grapevine as it's like commercially grown in Germany, but also other countries in the world, is the fact that it's grafted. So a Riesling or a Pinot Noir or, you know, whatever your favorite variety is, does not stand on its own roots, but it's, you know, physically grafted onto a rootstock variety that from a genetics perspective is a totally different genotype. So it's like, it's the grapevine as you see them in the vineyard. If you drive around, you know, the Rheingau or other wine growing regions, the grapevines you see there, they're like typical chimeras, really. So they consist of two completely different genotypes. And that obviously brings on challenges, but also opportunities with regards to tackling, you know, important questions for genetic improvement. Because if someone asks me, what are you trying to improve? It's always like, well, with regards to which part, the upper or the lower part? So, and just to maybe give you one or two examples. So, climate change impacts and mitigation of those obviously is a big problem. And in that context, probably most importantly, water, drought tolerance, tolerance to sort of like, yeah, low amounts of rainfall and water supply in the soil. That's a big challenge. And obviously we try to focus on that a lot in our rootstock breeding program. But then with regards to the upper part, it's a lot about improving sustainability of grapevine or vine production systems, you know, because most cultivars that we grow, like Riesling or all Pinot variety, or really almost all famous varieties, you know, are pretty old, hundreds of years, if not thousands of years old, and they're pretty susceptible to a range of different fungal diseases. And so they need to be managed quite intensively, you know, from a fungicide treatment perspective and so on. So we try to, with regards to improving the upper part, we're making new crosses, for example, to accumulate or pyramid resistance genes in new grapevine varieties that are both very suitable from a viticultural perspective. So they're very suitable to producing high quality wines, but also they only need to be sprayed say 30% as much as traditional cultivars. So I'd say these two things, water or drought stress, water limitation is a big theme in our research, but also improving sustainability via accumulating or targeted introgression of resistances into new cultivars. That's also like a big topic.
Mm-hmm. So you've mentioned Riesling as your favorite wine in the beginning. How old is Riesling?
Well, that's a good one. So we don't know absolutely for sure, but the first written record, or like the first record where Riesling was firstly documented, is almost 600 years old. So it's actually quite likely that the variety itself is older, but it's at least 600 years old. So we've been using that cultivar to produce white wine for centuries, really. So over a really long period of time. In fact, if I may add to this, there's other cultivars that people tend to really like Pinot Noir, for example. That cultivar is more than 2,000 years old, which many people don't know. So we've been maintaining those cultivars because we like them so much, or because they're really important to viticulture and regions where they're produced in. We maintained them over a really long period of time.
And I'm sure that's something that's changed significantly over the years, this focus with climate change becoming more of a point in recent years.
Yeah, well, definitely is. It's funny because, I mean, well, it's not funny really, but it's just fascinating, I should put it. If you consider Germany as a production region, we really never had big issues, I'd say, with water availability in vineyards. So, well, this is probably a bit too much of a generalization, but on average, that's actually true, just looking at long-term trends. But now in the last 1 to 2 decades, the number of extreme years and also of years where it has been outstandingly dry and outstandingly hot has just increased in frequency like very seriously, very, very rapidly. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting also talking to growers, talking to producers. Our uni has a very big network consisting of small to mid to large scale wine producers in the country, but also other countries. And they survey them regularly. And one thing that always pops up in these surveys is like at like the 99.5 sort of percent alignment is like we need better rootstocks, for example. Like we need to be, or drought tolerance is a big thing. So we need sort of the genetics that we can work with that are capable of delivering stable yields at much harsher conditions than what we used to in the past.
Mm-hmm. You're part of the international research group ACGG, that's short for Accelerating Crop Genetic Gain. And I assume the name is kind of the game, so that speeding up the genetic gain of crop is the main goal. How do you go about achieving that goal?
Yeah, that's a very interesting one. So the ACGG program, that's actually that's an international research training group, an IRTG program funded by the DFG here in Germany. And led out of Gießen University. So the main PI there is Rod Snowden, who's leading this. And this is in collaboration with our partners at the University of Queensland in Brisbane, which I know very well because I've lived and worked there for several years myself. Like you said, the name is the game. So this is basically a very big training program that aims to train up about 25 or more PhD students over a course of several years and also involves several postdoctoral positions that tackle different questions with relevance to speeding up the varietal development process. So we've got a pretty strong emphasis on data-driven sort of breeding operations, so how to best make use of large data at different levels, genomics, phenomics, all the omics you can probably think of. We've got pretty strong focus as well on biotechnology, so gene editing and similar approaches to sort of custom design cultivars, and a lot obviously is at the interface of like fusing different types of data. So, you know, breeding methodology, how to best integrate these data sets in order to make more informed, more robust, more successful selection decisions in a breeding program context. That's also a huge emphasis. So basically trying to train up different cohorts of students in different mm-hmm. areas, but obviously with as much interaction as possible. So they get like broad exposure to international sort of consortium of people mm-hmm. that are working or that are experts in different areas, both here in Germany, but also in Australia, mm-hmm. and also with quite substantial involvement of other partners as well, like the Julius Kühn Institute here in Germany, mm-hmm. which is also an associated partner like we are, but also one or two breeding companies where, you know, students get exposure to, you know, how breeding operations are run from a commercial perspective or in a commercial mm-hmm. context, which is also quite important or quite interesting.
Mm-hmm. That seems like it's a very broad approach to training, both from the interdisciplinary standpoint or the standpoint of integrating partners from both the research and the industry side and having them. But they're participating in research themselves. So they're doing research and learning at the same time.
Exactly. Right? Yes, exactly. That's the goal. And obviously the goal as well is like helping them to establish networks, helping them to establish themselves as the next generation of breeders, if you will, that are then, you know, gonna become important actors in various positions, be it in the public sector, be it in the private sector, but really driving innovations that can enable us to achieve this huge goal of, accelerating genetic gain, which we believe will be one of the keys, to a lot of challenges or to solving a lot of challenges that we're facing in agriculture, but also as society as a whole, to be honest, because agriculture sort of that's important for everybody, even the ones not directly involved in agriculture.
That's certainly true. I'm curious to explore that more. So why do you think this kind of approach is important to allow for innovation, to maybe set the groundwork for innovation in the field?
Plant breeding, well, breeding in general, animal breeding as well, breeding in general has been extremely successful. Conventional breeding has been extremely successful. Actually, one of the main drivers of innovation in agriculture over the last couple of decades. My sort of most tangible example is like I come from a farm. We're still managing sort of the same fields. My brother is now a farmer. And my brother harvests on average 3 times as much winter wheat, for example, on the same piece of land that my grandpa used to harvest. So he harvested only a third of what my brother is now harvesting about 50, 60 years later. So that's just spectacular. Obviously, that's not all due to breeding. We've seen, you know, improvements in fertilizers, improvements in plant protection, improvement in management techniques. But I think it's not what I think. It's actually, we can demonstrate that, but probably about 30 to 50% of these drastic increases of like per area yields are due to breeding. So that's, you know, just making this very clear. I'm not saying conventional breeding hasn't done great. It's done spectacularly well. But now looking into the future, if we sort of try to project whatever we've managed to achieve in the past into the future and see where we end up in 20 or 30 or 40 years time with all the, you know, challenges lying ahead of us, like increase in, you know, population growth, sustainability issues, all that, we will just simply not meet those challenges. So we're talking about genetic gain estimates currently for big crop species are around 1% per year. So, for example, for major cereal crops that feed 50% of the world population, we talk about roughly 1% increase in yield per year. That's, you know, the estimate of genetic gain that's been realized on farm. Mm-hmm. To be able to meet the challenges that lie ahead of us, we need, for several major crops, we need to increase that number from 1% to 2%. So we need to double the rate of genetic gain. And without even, you know, being very sort of deeply involved in that topic, whenever you need to double anything, that basically just means you need to make some serious changes or some serious adjustments to the way you've been operating, any operation really that you can think of. So and same goes for breeding operations. So we basically want to push up this number of like roughly 1% a year to 2% a year. on average. Obviously, it depends on the crop species. And we see huge potential in applying all different types of technologies that we now have at hand. And this is also the message to the younger sort of generation of breeders that we're working with, or breeding researchers that we're working with. You now have possibilities. You have technologies at hand that simply weren't there 20, 30 years ago. And the best way to integrate them, I mean, I guess that's now the challenge or the key research question is like, what potential can we actually unlock by strategically bringing these things together? And like, maybe my like last sentence on this question would just be, and I really like to refer to a close colleague of mine and actually like my mentor for several years, Professor Mark Cooper at the University of Queensland. Like whenever he talks about this, and obviously he's got decades worth of experience, and but he always like, basically just says, well, the great thing is breeding works. So this is, you know, we can alter traits. So breeding actually works. We've got very rich data that can sort of, you know, that can prove this. And now it's really just about, you know, how to speed up that process and how to basically run into the direction we want to run with regards to, you know, developing cultivars that meet requirements and enable us to tackle challenges. Not today, but like 10 or 20 or 30 years from now. Yeah. And we are very hopeful knowing about the technologies that we've now got available and knowing the talent that we're fortunate to work with. We're actually, yeah, we feel kind of challenged, but also we feel pretty optimistic that we can deliver on these goals.
I think those points are totally totally make sense. But you've opened up quite a long view, right? Like if we're looking 10, 20 years down the line, what would you say maybe are trends you can already speak about, or maybe milestones or results in your research so far?
Yeah, no, that's a great.
That's
point.
A mean one, right?
Actually, yes, because I mean, obviously, if anything, I mean, this is a research program, really. So we wanna provide, you know, like a very strong basis for career development, for basically equipping the students or the PhD students that come out of this program. Want to equip them with the right skill sets, so they can actually, you know, grow on and develop on by themselves. And actually become the next leaders of initiatives like this in a couple of years' time. And this only goes through very good training, very good hard skills. Soft skills are important. Like we already touched on the networking bit, but also hard skills, really. And I guess the biggest milestones there would be, yeah, to have a number of students trained up in all these different areas after a couple of years' time that have done excellent research, published excellent papers in those different research fields, and are in a great position to be leading future initiatives and also collaborative efforts and so on. So not exactly sure if the question is, are you going to release a new variety in 3 years? to be honest, I mean, and maybe this is not entirely clear also like to people listening to this, but breeding is a pretty long-term undertaking. So it really highly depends on the crop you're working with. If you're working with spring cereals, for example, pasta wheat, which, you know, I guess many people like pasta or eat pasta, you can probably think of maybe about 8 years that it would take from crossing to releasing a new cultivar. And this is probably the fastest it can get. If you think about red wheat, winter wheat, like classically would take at least 12 years, more like maybe 15 years could also happen. Like it depends a bit on the situation. If you deal with something like grapevine, where you want to improve rootstock cultivars of grapevine, we're talking about timeframes of around 30 to 35 years. So really, like, I mean, this has to do with the perennial nature of the crop itself. So it takes a very long time until the crop develops, until you can actually start measuring things on it, and until genotypes show their full potential. So, you know, we're talking about going from, I mean, even 8 years, arguably, are not very fast, you know, in terms of development speed. But yeah, that's a very, very important feature of any breeding operation. Now, in this IRTG program, the ACGG, the focus there is on crops, on two crop species that have huge potential for different reasons, but are also kind of underrepresented in commercial breeding efforts yet. So one is sorghum. Sorghum as like sort of like a substitute almost for maize in some ways. Very interesting crop, very, very robust to harsh conditions, and with huge potential. So we can probably generate gains there probably slightly quicker than we could for corn, where there's a, or maize, where there's a huge sort of commercial breeding industry behind it that are also investing quite a lot of money and resources and effort into improving cultivars for this species. And the other one is faba bean, you know, talking about different or changing consumer behaviors and preferences and so on. So we want to move away from animal-based protein to more plant-based protein, and if possible, like locally produced or regionally produced. So faba bean is becoming one sort of, really, really promising and interesting crop species as well. And also with regards to crop rotations from a farming perspective, it's a legume, so it sort of helps fixating nitrogen, and it's kind of like it fits very well, I guess, in several crop rotation systems from a farming perspective as well. So this is the other crop species that ACGG is focusing on. And also for this one, we could probably, hopefully, kind of deliver or develop some new output and some new outcomes a bit quicker than we could for crops, you know, that have been very extensive or intensively bred, like maize or soybean or things like that.
Or even as you were mentioning earlier, the grapevine that you focus on your, like, outside of this project that we've been talking about. So in your research at the Geisenheim University, if you're looking at 30 to 35 years, I'm sure there too, the technology that you mentioned before, data-driven omics, biotech, like gene editing, infusing all of these, like, AI and all these advances we have. Do you see any outlook where that might hopefully reduce that time as well? Because 30 to 35 years in times of climate change is a long time.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. Like, so breeding in its core, like, operations, like, is actually really simple. Like, you shuffle genetic diversity via crossing, for example. So you generate new offspring, new individuals that assemble new sets of alleles, and then you sort out which ones sort of show preferential sort of traits or trait expressions or trait combinations, and which ones I don't know don't really give you any benefit from a grower, so from an agricultural perspective. That's the situation we're always in, and that's in principle simple, right? Like, you know, it's really just about sorting out or selecting or finding the needle in a haystack out of, like, hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of new offspring, which one is the one that will actually outperform everything that we've currently got on the market. And especially for this task that, in its principle sounds easy, but in reality it's really hard. I think, you know, we can expect a lot from using and applying and integrating different technologies, both from the data generation side of things. So we're now generating completely new types of data that we, you know, wouldn't have been used like 20 years ago, but also the way we now integrate. You mentioned AI, for example, that's an interesting one, but also, you know, there's different sort of data driven approaches that we're now using to help us in that process of finding that needle in the haystack. And definitely, especially for crops, well, it will certainly help for crops with shorter generation intervals, like cereals, for example, but it will definitely have a huge impact in perennials like grapevine, but also other trees, for example, or if you think about apple or, you know, other fruit trees. So they're the, like, impact we could potentially generate by using those technologies is huge, actually. Yes, and that's because we can save up a lot of time. That means, very practical example, like, we're making a cross now this year. Like, we're in the phase now of planning our new crosses, both for rootstock and scion cultivars. And then, you know, we will have seedlings ready in about a year time. And from then on, I mean, the genetics is already there. Sort of, you know, we've got an individual there. And if we could already at that stage predict which ones are, you know, which ones are more likely going to perform better and which ones are more likely going to perform poor, we would gain a lot, because we can then really prioritize and really channel our resources to testing those that are most likely going to be very performant and very interesting for growers and so on. So yes, the very long-winded answer to your question We do hope, and actually I think there's reason we can be hopeful to be able to shrink down or reduce this really long breeding sort of cycle time of about 30 years to, yeah, maybe 20 years, maybe 15 years. And there's some examples where people have actually managed to do that, considering some of the more like fundamental quantitative genetics theory and selection theory that would do huge things to the amount of genetic gain that we can actually realize. If we are able to get that number down by 10 years or even half mm-hmm. that number, that would basically have huge impacts on the amount of gain we can generate.
Mm-hmm. And maybe as a final question, because you gave that great concrete example, but you used the conductive. You said if we could predict which seedlings have maybe a higher likelihood of succeeding within the conditions that you're kind of breeding for, that sounds like you're not sure that you can, or if you can, how are you going about that?
That's the bottleneck, really. Like, we've got a methodology in theory that could help us sort of performing or executing prediction-based breeding operations. The only problem, especially in systems like ours, is that we are not yet in a position to have access to training data sets or reference data sets that we can use to train prediction models. And that's a big, I don't like the word problem so much. I'd say that's a big challenge. really is, because it's really just a question of like how we go about this as a research community. And what we actually, how we sort of try to go about this challenge. I was almost going to say problem again, but the way we hope to sort of tackle that challenge of like small training data sets or basically building more predictive capacity is that we really want to integrate or it's almost like harmonizing operations of multiple different research groups that are interested in similar questions. So we're not the only grapevine breeding sort of place. There's not extremely many, but compared to other crops, but there's others, certainly in Germany, but also in other countries. Now, they're all interested in the same questions. Like, it's not that we're doing something completely different. So we're all sort of aiming to work towards the same goal. But if we were combining our resources, if we were sort of combining our data sets, that could actually enable us or that could actually strongly improve on this on this situation that we're currently in and actually enable us to build data sets that are large enough so we can at least predict at reasonable or usable from breeding operation perspective, usable accuracies, because that's really what it comes down to. Like it's a bit of a numbers game. Like your predictions don't need to be perfect. They just need to be good enough that you can push certain trait characteristics mm-hmm. in the directions you want to push them. So you basically run in the direction roughly that you want to be running into and not going like the complete wrong way, I guess. But that's something we've got on our radar, and we're planning and preparing initiatives in grapevine breeding, certainly mm-hmm. with our partners here in the country, JKI and also others. Where we try to do exactly that, basically acknowledging the fact that everybody, even though we're relatively big as a public research group, but realizing that in a perennial system like grapevine, we will not be able to build training data sets by ourselves that are large enough to gain really like strong predictive power. We team up with others, and hopefully in a year or two, we'll be in a situation where we can actually to transition more rapidly towards a predictive breeding system also in grapevine that mm-hmm. has some power to accelerate gain at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like we should have another podcast episode in 2 years' time where you can hopefully share a little bit more. Kai, thank you so much for your time and giving us some insight into your research both at Geisenheim University, but also with the ACGG group. And we'll be adding a few links in the show notes so our audience can check out your work in more detail as well. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much, Anna, for the invite and to the whole Computomics team. And more than happy to discuss as well. This will be, there's lots of open questions, probably more questions than answer I can provide at this point. But thanks very much.
Thank you for listening in today. Want to learn more? Then check out our show notes and more info on computomics.com. If you have questions or want to propose a next guest, please reach out to us at podcast@computomics.com.